Welcome to 30 Brave Minutes, a podcast of the College of Arts and Sciences at the University of North Carolina at Pembroke. In 30 Brave Minutes, we'll give you something interesting to think about. Our topic today is the holiday season. Joining us are Dr. David Nickel, Moti Inbari, Michael Burnson, Jane Halliday, and Siva Mangini. Our host for 30 Brave Minutes is Dr. Jeff Frederick, Dean of the College of Arts and Sciences.
The average American will spend $700 on Christmas this year, collectively contributing to about a $465 billion jolt to the economy. The day after Thanksgiving has gone from a time of family relaxation for some and finding creative ways to repackage turkey leftovers to a ritual of bargain shopping at breakneck pace in order to make sure the crock pot you plan to give to Aunt Sally and Uncle George can be obtained for $24.99 instead of $34.99. Few Americans actually celebrated holidays like Christmas in the 17th, 18th, or first half of the 19th century. Some, like many Puritans, found the concept unscriptural. Others had little time, energy, disposable income, or sense of commonality to practice any of the traditions that are done today. A rural America didn't congregate often, and communication and transportation made that challenging anyway. When gifts did begin to be exchanged in different traditions, they were often homemade dolls or clothing, seasonal fruit, maybe a piece of peppermint. Of course, America has always been a tremendously diverse place, meaning some had other traditions, non-Christian or no religious inclinations at all related to some holidays, old world customs, tribal ceremonies of great import that didn't necessarily correspond to the 12-month American version of the calendar. Even the famed poem, "'Twas the Night Before Christmas," first published in 1823 and credited to Clement Clark Moore, has at least some scholars wondering if the authorship was really the work of someone else. Moore's poem, or whoever wrote it, if he didn't, would not have applied to many Americans in 1823 anyway. They likely hadn't seen many sugar plums, probably didn't have much of a lawn to be a place for clatter, or if they had extra stockings at all, they would have applied them to their cold December feet rather than mount them on a fireplace. Plenty of households in America pull caricatures of pilgrims out of the attic in mid-November as a centerpiece to the coming reality of Thanksgiving in their lives. That stereotype of a 1621 event, of course, had multiple interpretations. Many Indian tribes were already offering thanks for harvest and other parts of life long before Europeans arrived. And some who partook of events on that first Thanksgiving soon found themselves threatened, literally and figuratively, by the very folks that had shared food with them earlier. If you think finding the perfect gift for someone is a challenge, that's only one part of the series of conflicts that come for one reason or another at a time that theoretically has so much local, familial, personal, or spiritual meaning. The holidays can be the most relaxing, cherished festival of family, friends, and sometimes faith. It can also be a giant bucket of anxiety, frustration, and materialism. For all the joy and meaning of the season, psychologists tell us that many who face mental health challenges feel more pain at this time of the year. Our topic for today, the joy, emotion, tradition, multiple contested meanings, and conflict of the holidays. David Nickel is in his 15th year as professor of religion at UNCP. He received his Ph.D. in religious studies from Duke University and pastors a small United Church of Christ congregation in Fayetteville. Welcome, David.
Thank you, Dr. Frederick.
What's the basis for the primary seasonal Christian holidays this time of year, and how has their celebration and meaning changed over time and across different divisions of the faith?
Well, the two principal holidays for Christianity are Easter and Christmas. Easter would be more significant theologically because of the resurrection of Jesus. But Christmas, as Dr. Frederick has alluded to, because it's also a secular and commercial holiday, gets a lot more attention than Easter. The birth of Jesus actually wasn't observed for several centuries in the church. Only two of the Gospels record anything about his birth. It's not mentioned in any other part of the New Testament. But eventually, Christians came to observe his birthday on December 25th. This holiday is paired with another holiday called Epiphany, which, at least for those churches that observe the church year, the Christian calendar, is January 6th. And that's where you get the 12 days of Christmas, for any who observe 12 days of Christmas.
I've received some of those gifts somewhere. Yes. There's a partridge somewhere in my house. That's a different story.
There's just something in the paper about how much it would cost to give all of those things in today's economy. Anyway, the focus is on God becoming human. For Epiphany, it's kind of reversed. The focus is on the divinity, the glory of God being revealed in Christ. Epiphany, the focus of Epiphany is the coming of the wise men, the Magi. That meant that Jesus was not just for Jews, but for Gentiles, the nations. They're giving gifts as at least one of the explanations or excuses for giving gifts at Christmas, because the Magi gave gifts to Christ. And there's also a tradition going back to the original St. Nicholas, who was a bishop in the early church in the 4th century in Asia Minor, who was known for, at least legendarily, for giving secret gifts. Most famously, there were three daughters who were going to have to go into prostitution if they didn't have some money. So as the story goes, St. Nicholas throws some coins into their stockings, and so they're saved from a life of ill repute.
I have never gotten a Christmas card with that.
Really? I'm surprised. I'm surprised. There is a season of preparation for Christmas known as Advent, which means coming. And at least, again, for churches that observe the Christian year, there's 4 weeks of Advent, and churches will light a successive candle, add a candle each Sunday to first is hope, peace, joy, and then finally love, and the Christ candle on Christmas. Speaking of candle lighting, there's also for many churches a Christmas Eve candle lighting service, the symbolism of Christ as the light of the world. Another tradition that developed is that of the Christmas tree, which goes back to pagan customs a long time ago. There's a legend that Martin Luther put candles on a tree. I mean, it's a legend. It's not historical.
Did he consult the fire department before?
He did not. He did not. And actually, as maybe some historians might know, Christmas trees became popular in England and then the United States when Queen Victoria's prince brought from Germany the celebration of the Christmas tree. The Christmas tree and other evergreens like holly, for Christians, they have the meaning of everlasting life in Christ. So there's just a few of the symbols and meanings of the Christmas
holiday.
Lots of
traditions, lots of customs, lots of culture, lots of religion. Modi Imbari is an associate professor of religion at UNCP. Dr. Imbari focuses his research on Jewish fundamentalism, mostly in Israel, but also in the United States and in Europe. He's the author of 3 books, the most recent being Jewish Radical Ultra-Orthodoxy Confronts Modernity, Zionism and Women's Equality. Dr. Imbari earned his PhD at the Hebrew University of Jerusalem and has also served as a fellow at the University of Florida and at the Schusterman Center for Israel Studies at Brandeis. Welcome.
Thank you.
Talk a bit about the primary Jewish holiday traditions, and how does the level of orthodoxy in your faith change the way in which you might practice some of those traditions?
Okay, so the Jewish holiday that is being celebrated in December is called Hanukkah. And Hanukkah, the literal meaning of Hanukkah is dedication, or it actually should be translated as rededication. And this is, of course, Judaism is a very old religion, and this holiday comes to celebrate a rebellion that the Jews have performed against the Greek Empire and was succeeded, yes, and they were able to establish a small Jewish kingdom for a period of about 100 years. So this this holiday comes to celebrate freedom and getting rid of oppression. But it also comes to tell that the way in which the rabbis understood this holiday was that God was giving the Jews the power. So it was the miracle of God. And there's another miracle that is associated with this holiday, which is the miracle of the menorah or the candelabrum. And according to the mythology, of course, of the Jews, when the Jews were able to recapture the temple, there was just one jar of oil, and they used it to light the candelabrum or the menorah. It's called in Hebrew menorah. And the oil was enough for one day, but God performed the miracle, and it lasted for 7 days. And this is why Hanukkah is celebrated for 7 days, as to fit the myth of the miracle. In Jewish traditions, the emphasis is usually on God. God performs the miracle, gives the Jews power. God performs miracles, gives Jews oil. It's all about God. And generally speaking, Hanukkah is not an important Jewish holiday in the Jewish calendar because it's not part of the Bible. It's after the Bible. It's celebrated from a period after the Bible was concealed. Now, in modern times, Hanukkah became an important Jewish holiday for two different reasons. First of all, for Zionism, the Zionist movement, later the State of Israel, saw in Hanukkah a very interesting symbol that they can use for their nationalistic identity, which is, of course, it's a symbol of Jewish power and Jewish victory. And Jewish sovereignty, yes. And so they took Hanukkah, which was not an important holiday, and made it a very important holiday for the Zionist myth. In America, it was Americanized. It became the holiday of lights, yes, just like the Christians are putting lights on their houses and lighting candles. So the Jews also need to light candles. It's part of the tradition. So why not make it like similar and gifts and so on? This is an American thing. In Israel, nobody gives presents on Hanukkah. It's not a present holiday at all. But this was just an Americanization of traditions and make it suitable to the American audience. But you ask me about Orthodoxy. So Orthodox Jews may look at Hanukkah in a very different way just as well. It is a celebration of God's power. God gave the Jews the power to win the Greek Empire and gave them and made perform miracles in the temple. So it can be understood from all kinds of ways. It can be understood as a holiday of miracles. It can be understood as a holiday of national pride and identity. It can be understood as a celebration of lights and a gift offering.
So some different holidays and traditions which can be interpreted significantly differently based on the perspective one might be coming from. Dr. Michael J. Burnson is an assistant professor in the English Theater and Foreign Languages Department and is serving as the interim director of the Writing Center. He is the advisor for UNCP's paintball team, I need to hang out with y'all more often, and the Secular Student Alliance. His greatest accomplishments include in completing the Boston Marathon in 4.5 hours, impressive, beating the Outer Banks Rooster Challenge, also impressive, and cohabitating with an internet famous cat named Awesome Possum, perhaps the most impressive of all. Mike, how do the non-religious or atheists, agnostics, feel about all the attention surrounding these holiday traditions? And do they sometimes celebrate the Americanization of some of these holidays but detach the faith-based portions?
A lot of different reactions. Many of us embrace it because it's an excuse to put colorful lights on a house, and it's a wonderful time. We get to buy things for other people, buy things for ourselves. Others become skeptical of how, especially the government, public spaces celebrate the holiday. Most of us are generally apathetic. Really, as secular thinkers, it's not what we do. So it all depends on kind of personal experience, personal preference. We become reactionary when if we say happy holidays at the woman in Dollar Tree, she yells at us and says, no, it's Jesus's birthday. This is the only holiday that matters. And we go, no, madam, there are about 25 different holidays being celebrated within about 4 weeks. And that's when we become reactionary, because we get that a lot in many, many areas of the country. A lot of us, and I think the two major groups when the holidays are very tragic, one group is the people who, and I never realized I used these terms until I started advising the Secular Alliance on campus. They use the same terms as LGBT. They are closeted atheists, and they are out, you know, so they use the same terms. For closeted atheists, it gets very, even more anxious than I guess a lot of other people experience, because they're in the house with the family, but they can't really talk. They know that they have limits on the conversation. And they know their dad is going to say something like, Hurricane Matthews was caused because America's not praying more. And instead of saying, well, Dad, I don't know if God's really a TV producer and treats prayers like ratings, we can't really have that discussion, right? It silences them, right? It becomes a holiday where they really can't speak their mind in front of their family. The other half that's really tragic is the ones who are out and they have no family left, because a lot of times, and we actually have UNCP students like this, when they decided that they were questioning even Christianity, not even becoming an atheist, they got kicked out of homes. I work with a military atheist group in Fort Bragg, and half of them have no family anymore. They kind of, the friends of their family. So for a lot of secular people, the holidays can be a very sad time, because it shows them that their family did not have unconditional love for them. That just because of a philosophical difference, they lost family, friends. And then it becomes very tragic, very nostalgic for a time when they believed that their family could love them unconditionally. That being said, though, we have winter solstice celebration with the group, and a lot of us basically, if we are in those situations where we lost family and friends, we form our own family. And so I have about 8 different parties in the next 3 weeks to go to with all secular people, atheists, humanists, all sorts of secular thinkers. And so we try to, they talk about reinventing and then just kind of re-embracing the meaning of a holiday. We just pretty much turned it into what we need, right? If we need family time, that's what we do. We have a big dinner. We decorate a Christmas tree. Ironically, we have a zombie nativity scene. There are numerous ways people kind of, appropriate different behaviors. Others, like me, I'm what we call a secular Christian, so I celebrate Christian holidays. I have a lot of friends who are Buddhist. I have a lot of friends who are Jewish. So I kind of just embrace all the different holidays. And if it's free food, I'm going with free food. That's more important. Yeah, exactly. Rules. I was a grad student. I know what free food means,
Good stuff. Jane Halliday is Associate Professor of American Indian Studies and a member of the Esther G. Maynor Honors College faculty. She has received awards for both outstanding teaching and for excellence in service. Dr. Halliday's research focuses on Native American literatures and sustainability issues. Hey, Jane.
Hey, Jeff.
Now, clearly there is a tremendous amount of diversity among different American Indian tribes. Talk just a bit about how a few different tribes might conceptualize the concept of holiday and how that might play out into their practice.
So your invitation to this podcast really got me thinking about what a holiday is. And I think, in mass American culture, we have these particular ideas that are often secular, not necessarily, but even the religious ones, as some of my colleagues have suggested, become secularized through consumption, et cetera. But often it's sort of a fixed day or a fixed series of days that honors an individual or honors, originally a god. You'd get the day off from work, you get free food, whatever. There's really no parallel to that kind of conception of a holiday in traditional indigenous cultures. That doesn't mean that contemporary Native American people do not also celebrate any of, the holidays that other people celebrate. Christmas, Thanksgiving, a very troubled holiday that maybe we'll talk more about later, but I won't go into detail now. Some Native people totally reject Thanksgiving because of its history. What Native peoples have always and still continue to celebrate really are seasonal ceremonial cycles, and these are not only, in the winter months, in the fall months, they're year-round. So the purpose of these holidays really, I'm sorry, I'm not going to use that term, the purpose of these celebrations, these gatherings of the community are really to come together, honor the abundance of the natural world, commemorate plant the beginning of a planting season, the conclusion of a planting season when plants are gathered in, harvested. The Nez Perce, who was a Northwest tribe in contemporary Idaho, for example, has a first food ceremony. So do a lot of Northwest Coast peoples. So do all Native peoples. But the Nez Perce and the Northwest Coast peoples have a first food ceremonies in the fall where they celebrate elk, deer, salmon, bitterroot, huckleberries, particular foods that have origin stories to their cultures, were given to them by the holy people. However, their particular nation conceives of those higher powers, and they celebrate those foods. They give speeches. They pray. The Iroquois people in the Northeast and a lot of Southeast and Eastern peoples have a celebration for the first strawberries in spring because they're both delicious and a harbinger that spring is coming. There are green corn ceremonies that these tribes also celebrate in the Southeast that honor the coming abundance of corn. Corn is universally sacred to traditional Native peoples in the Americas, throughout the Americas. The Pueblo peoples in the Southwest have a ceremony both at the beginning of the corn planting season and the gathering in of the corn. In traditional Pueblo homes, newborn babies are given two perfect ears of corn that are called their mothers. So, you know, I think one of the main differences in the way maybe mass culture celebrates the idea of Thanksgiving, which is gather your family together, however you conceive a family, eat a bunch of food, be thankful for the food. Native peoples have always viewed foods as their relatives, literal relatives. So that is something to be celebrated and honored year round. Other celebrations and gatherings that Native peoples observe have to do with cleansing, have to do with healing, all, again, in the interest of sort of keeping the world in balance and maintaining right relationship with the natural world.
Great stuff. Dr. Stephen Mangini is the chair of the Department of Chemistry and Physics, a member of UNCP's faculty since 1996. Dr. Mangini is an award-winning professor of chemistry with an experience in bioprocessing, protein chemistry, and crystallization, and other subjects. He is a past recipient of the coveted Board of Governors Teaching Award. Welcome, Siva.
Thanks, Jeff. I'm going to talk about, I'm coming from India, so I have to talk about holiday seasons in India, mostly because I was born and brought up there. If you look at the Indian population, Hindus are 80%, you have to agree with me, David, and then Christians only 2.5%, okay? So when I was looking at the biggest holiday seasons in India, I don't see Christmas is really that great, you know? All I see when I was a kid there, you know, my neighbors bring them sweets. That's all the celebration in India. So, and then I see all the Christians go to the church and then the midnight and then they come back. That's a memory I have about India. When I came to France for my higher education, I really felt very happy in France because France is the place to enjoy the Christmas day because I would call that as an economical development day because that's the only day you can sell everything there. So I truly enjoyed in France because everybody was giving gifts, but I don't know what's going on in my neighbor's house, but I see only exchanging the gifts and everything. But if we get about a week off in the labs, so we don't have to work. Simply eat and enjoy your life. So that's an experience I have in France. When I came to the United States in 96, it is exactly the same thing as I saw in France. So Christmas is, to me, is enjoyable weekdays and a lot of exchange of gifts. And when I was a kid, I enjoyed it, but now I'm a parent of two kids. Now I see my pocket is going down.
Because economic development day continues.
There you go. So we have to, in the budget, you have to keep for some money for Christmas and this for these holidays. Indian celebration, holiday season, really, truly, if you have to learn about this, is Pongal, P-O-N-G-A-L. That's a celebration I truly enjoy in India. Even here, I do that. I don't forget those holidays here. It's a 4 days holidays for us. First day here is we burn all the unwanted thing before your house. That's a day number one. Day number two, we make a pongal. That means it is basically we get all the harvested food, especially the rice. We take them, we polish them, we grind them, and then we put some sugar and we put some milk, and then we make that pongal and then eat that pongal. What is all about food here is it makes you happy. Anytime you are hungry here, when you eat food here, it makes you feel like you are up in the air. You know,
I'm hungry right now.
There you go. And then it's especially it's that pongal is full of sugar and milk, so it is an enjoyable thing. What is the idea behind this festival is to thank the farmers, because we should never ever forget the farmers, okay? Because they give us, they grow the rice and they feed you, but that's the only day we respect those farmers. And we, my dad bring all the farmers to my house. About 50 farmers, we feed them all the thing. Make sure they are all fed nicely here, because their blessing is so important to us. If they bless us, the whole country is great about that. So, in my opinion, we should respect number one the soldiers, the doctors, the nurses. The fourth one is a farmer. So we should never ever forget farmers. The second thing here is we respect the cows, because in India, we don't have technology. So we use cow for plowing the land, they give us milk and everything, milk, cheese, butter, whatever you name it, we're all getting from them. So that's why we call them a holy cow. You know, sometimes when we curse people here, hey, holy cow, you know, that's what we say. I don't know why they say it, but I love cow because I don't eat. I'm not supposed to eat beef, but I eat it. Don't tell my mother, okay? cow is really a great thing for our country here, because it is our friend, you know. And the third day, we celebrate only the cow, you know. We bring the cow inside the house. We feed them, make the cow happy. And then we take the cow all around the village. And then we play songs. And then we enjoy that day, third day. The last day here is we make sure we take it a point. We meet all the our friends and relatives. Go there, get their blessings. And that's the fourth day. So these 4 days is exactly equivalent to Christmas here, you know. So there is something you all have to know about the holiday season, which is Pongal, which is going to be celebrated on January the 14th. Also, we call them as a new year for us. Our new year starts on January 14th.
And if you know Siva, you also know that he also celebrates any time he can get his beloved cricket on TV so
yes,
he can watch
I love it.
From the comfort of his lazy boy.
We'll return to 30 Brave Minutes in a moment. But first, thank you for listening and for your financial support of the College of Arts and Sciences. When you give before January 1st, your donation will be tax deductible for 2016 and will go to work right away to support the College of Arts and Sciences and its many programs for students in the community. The fund exists to help students and faculty make meaningful connections to the community, the state, and beyond through intellectual inquiry, scholarships, and research in the humanities, social sciences, and STEM fields. So consider a contribution today. Mark your envelope, the Dean's Fund, College of Arts and Sciences, UNC Pembroke, Hickory Hall, Pembroke, North Carolina, 28372, or call the College of Arts and Sciences at 910-521-6198. You can also find us on the web. And now, back to 30 Brave Minutes and your host, Jeff Frederick.
Well, one of the things that several of you brought up is the strong connection between celebration, holiday, and food. And that connection is strong in so many cultures. Talk a little bit more about how food connects formally or informally with the traditions that that you all either celebrate or have talked about already.
Fruitcake is infamous for a Christmas gift. I don't know why.
Infamously bad.
Exactly. I never care for it myself.
Is that English in origin?
I believe
fruitcake,
so.
Candied fruit.
Yeah, candied fruit.
Way to preserve fruit. Huh.
Currants and dried fruit with spicing that I never cared for.
Yeah, me neither.
Yeah, the tradition in Hanukkah is to eat oily, greasy food. And it connects with the oil, yeah, so this is why we're eating donuts and, it's latkes. It's called latkes, which is basically fried potatoes.
So, you know, that fits in with me because as Southerners and as a Southern historian, we fry everything anyways.
Yeah.
You can easily do that.
So do you think that some of these food traditions, and I'm thinking of Pongal too after you describe it, Siva, I mean, originally were about ensuring abundance, that some of us are not as concerned about doing that depending on our financial situations now, but to eat the greasy food, I mean, that's actually a way of ensuring you're going to have a little body fat and survive, right? I mean, the milk and sugar with the rice, that I assume would be quite a delicacy and not an everyday thing for a lot of people during Pongal. Is that correct?
The difference between the ordinary Pongal and the Pongal on the January 14th is different. We take the freshly harvested rice and we make Pongal out of that. To pay the respect to the sun, because sun is the is everything.
Yes.
Like in Christianity, you see only Jesus as your Lord, right? But here in Hinduism, we have a lot of gods. What is a god? God means we pay respect to one single person for some reason. So sun, without sun, no photosynthesis.
Yeah.
And without photosynthesis, there's no rice. Therefore, we take that harvested rice, clean them, polish them, and make that pongal that particular day. And if you make a pongal with milk and sugar, that you feel happy about that. That's it. So to make you happy and be happy with respect to the community, that is our goal.
Your mention of the sun makes me think of another ceremony for some native peoples, which is the sun dance that a lot of the Northern Plains people, Lakota peoples, did perform and still do perform, but that actually involves fasting. So I think for many traditions, you know, fasting and food play some role. There's feasting after the fasting, but in the sun dance, it's a very sacred, very physically demanding, prayerful time that also is in recognition of the sun and sounds like for very similar reasons, just the giver of all life, basically, because without it, we do not get plants and do not get fed. So,
yeah, I always see food as a connection with community because we need farmers. You automatically, if you haven't grown your own food, you know that there's a community already there. And now when we're making food and sharing with others, that's not only just done in a selfish way to show off your cooking skills, right? You know, we do it to feed others. We do it to bring everybody to a common table. And, you know, we have that kind of metaphor of the round table, all sorts of things. So I think that breaking the bread message and breaking the bread metaphor really works to bring people together over food. You know, there's nothing like a bottle of beer and with friends and, you know, nothing like...
And cheese fondue.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you know, yeah, just ultimate community food, you know.
It reminds me of something else, you know. In our Indian tradition, why do we feed food to the people when you come for the marriage? There's a difference between a blessing without food and with the food. Mm. You see that when you feed people, they bless you great.
Yeah.
Seriously. And when you don't feed the food here, their blessing is less than 50%, I would say. So when you are fed, the happiness comes and then they bless you, you know, with a full heart. So food makes a big difference.
It's great stuff. We could go on for some time. Let's close with this. Finally, talk a little bit maybe about a specific memory you have from one of the holidays you've celebrated or that you hearken back to this time of year. And while y'all are thinking, I'll mention one. I grew up in Florida, so the idea of a white Christmas was really a mirage. But there was one Christmas Eve, I remember, where the temperature dropped and we had a sprinkler system in our yard, and we had orange trees. and the sprinklers came on in the middle of the night after the temperature had gotten below 32 degrees, and they had sprayed all night on the orange trees, and we woke up the next morning and we looked out, and there were icicles hanging all down from the orange trees. And I thought, we finally got a white Christmas. As a kid, I thought that was about the greatest thing ever.
Well, you know, during these holidays, Jeff, you know, we should never, ever forget those people who are living in the orphan, you know. We make sure that, you know, we all have to remember these holiday seasons, we should help those people who are, you know, orphan and handicapped people. You know, we need to help them.
The poor and the hungry. Amen.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can say that for me, as someone who grew up in Israel and came to the United States, the transformation of the holiday, the Americanization of the holiday, for me, it also was a process, because my children were expecting to get gifts, and I wasn't thinking about it. Just
they reminded
ignorance.
You quickly.
Yeah, exactly.
For me, it always goes back to my grandpa. He would give me pretty much anything I wanted for Christmas, big gifts, you know, that my parents could afford. So he would always go, well, I gave you the Death Star playset. What are you going to give the world this year? You know, and I was like, I don't know. You know, because I'm like four, you know, I don't know what I'm doing. You know, like, but yeah, I'm like, I'm going to play? I don't know. But yeah, but he kept on saying that every year. And eventually when I was like eight, I was like, okay, I'm getting what you're trying to tell me, is, you know, that, and so I always remember that, just like, you know, the whole having my family try to reinforce that idea that, yeah, gifts are great, but you also have to do more for everybody else. You know, you always have to remember the people who don't have anything, the people who can't eat during the holidays, you know. So for me, it's always that kind of memory of, Leah, I have it pretty well, so I want to make sure everyone else has it pretty well too.
To that, I think we can all say amen. Yes. Whatever your tradition, wherever you came from, the concept of giving being more important than receiving, I think, is pretty universally understood. We all have a lot to be thankful for and a lot to feel good about, whether it's family or the meaning of the season or your traditions that you celebrate, the food that you're about to enjoy, maybe even just a little time off. We all have a lot to appreciate. Well, thanks for playing today and for being a part of our podcast. For those of you listening, thank you very much. Please pass it on to whoever else you think might enjoy it. And whatever you're celebrating this time of year, I hope that it will be a peaceful and fulfilling holiday season.
Today's podcast was produced by Dr. Richard Gay and transcribed by Ms. Janet Gentis. Theme music created by Riley Morton. This content is copyrighted by the University of North Carolina and the College of Arts and Sciences. It is to be used for educational and non-commercial purposes only, and is not to be changed, altered, or used for any commercial endeavor without the express written permission of authorized representatives of the University of North Carolina at Pembroke. The views and opinions expressed by any individuals during the course of these discussions are their own and do not necessarily represent the views, opinions, and positions of the University of North Carolina at Pembroke or any of its subsidiary programs, schools, departments, and divisions. While reasonable efforts have been made to ensure that information discussed is current and accurate at the time of release, neither UNCP nor any individual presenting material makes any warranty that information presented in the original recording has remained accurate due to advances in research, technology, or industry standards. Thanks for listening to 30 Brave Minutes, and go Braves!